Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Gopi Janabalava Giri Banudari Yasura Nandana Braja Janaranjana Yasura Nandana Braja Janaranjana Jamuna Tirabana Chari Jamuna Tirabana Chari Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Gopi Janabalava Giri Banudari Yasura Nandana Braja Janaranjana Jamuna Tiravana Chari Jaya Prabhupada Jaya Prabhupada Jaya Prabhupada Jaya Prabhupada Jaya Giri Govardhan, Jaya Giri Govardhan, Jaya Giri Govardhan, Jaya Giri Govardhan.
Jaya Nitya Lila Pravista Astatara Satasi Simanas Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Prem se kaho Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Sridharar Srivasini Sri Gaura Bhakti Vrinda Ki Jai Sri Sri Radha Shama Sunda Gopa Gopinath Shama Kundaradi Kundi Giri Govardhan Ki Jai Grantharad Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai Gaura Premanandi All glories to the assembled devotees All glories to the assembled devotees All glories to the assembled devotees All glories to the lotus feet of Sri Sri Guru and Gauranga Om Gyan Atim. No, I'm good. Thank you so much. Om Gyan Atim. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. There we go. All right, so today we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, third canto, chapter 20, text 22, 23, and 24. I'll chant the Sanskrit on individually on 22 and 23, and then collectively we'll chant on verse 24. Devata prabhaya hyaya divyam pramukato sujat te asa shur devo yanto vishritam tam prabham aham devo devan jaghannatta sri jati samti smati lolupam tehenam lolupattaya maitunya abhipedire tato hasan Sa Bhagavan Asurai Nirapatrpai Anviyamanas Tarasa Krudo Bita Parapatat Tato Hasansa Bhagavan Asurai Nirapatrpai Anviyamana tarasa krudho bita parapatat tatoha shansha bhagavan asura nirapatrapai anviryamana starasa krudho bita parapatat. Please chant. Toha sansa bhagavan asura nirapatrapai sa bhagavan asura nirapatrapai. Sa bhagavan asura nirapatrapai avina mana sarasa krudho pita parapatat. Ladies. Toha sansha bhagavan so the word for words are it's three verses, so it's quite extensive. I'm just going to run through them. Devata, the demigods, Prabhaya, with the glory of light. Interesting word, Prabhaya, with the glory of light. Yaya, those who, Divyan, shining, Pramukta, chiefly, Ashrijat, created, Te, they, Ahusur, took possession of, Devayanta, being active, Vishritam, separated, tam, that, prabham, effulgent form, aha, daytime, deva, Lord Brahma, arivan, the demons, jagahannata, from his buttocks, shrijatasma, gave birth, ati, lolupan, excessively fond of sex, te, they, enam, Lord Brahma, lolupattaya, with lust, maitunaya, for copulation, abhipidiri, approached, tata, then, hasan, laughing, sa bhagavan, the worshipful Lord Brahma, asurai, by the demons, nirapatrapai, shameless, anviyamana, being followed, tarasa, in great haste, krudha, angry, bitta, being afraid, parapatat, ran away. Translations to all three verses. He then created the chief demigods who were shining with the glory of goodness. He dropped before them the effulgent form of daytime, and the demigods sportingly took possession of it. Lord Brahma then gave birth to the demons from his buttocks, and they were very fond of sex. Because they were too lustful, they approached him for copulation. The worshipable Brahma first laughed at their stupidity, but finding the shameless asuras coming close upon him, he grew indignant and ran in great haste out of fear. Purports by Srila Prabhupada. Demons were born from the creation of night, and the demigods were born from the creation of day. In other words, demons like the yakshas and rakshas are born of the quality of ignorance, and demigods are born of the quality of goodness. Sex life is the background of material existence. Here also, it is repeated that the demons are very fond of sex life. The more one is free from the desire for sex, the more he is promoted to the level of the demigods. The more one is inclined to enjoy sex, the more they are degraded to the level of demoniac life. Sexually inclined demons have no respect even for their father, and the best policy for a saintly father like Lord Brahma is to leave such demoniac sons. Om Jnana Tamarandasya Jananjana Shalakaya Chaksu Unmritam Yenatasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Mukam Karoti Vachanam Pangun Lam Jayate Girim Yakripa Tamaham Bande Sri Gurum Dinitarino Avanchakapatirubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Vahevacha Patitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Sri Gadadhar Srivasa Rishi Gaura Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. My only constant companion, my only friend, my guru, my wealth, that which has delivered me, my great fortune and the source of my good luck, the form through which I taste pleasure, my obeisances to you, O Srimad Bhagavatam. I offer my respectful obeisances to you, O Srimad Bhagavatam. By your recitation, one attains transcendental bliss because your syllables shower pure love of God. You are to be served by everyone, always, for you are an incarnation of Lord Krishna. I offer my obeisances unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the invincible Lord Sri Krishna. Simply by meditating upon his lotus feet, I have been able to study and appreciate this great literature, Srimad Bhagavatam. So, as someone once said before, after that very non-controversial verse in Purport, due to the fact that the Bhagavatam deals with the entire process of creation, sometimes the subject matters seem a little bit put offish or awkward. Yet, as it says in this verse, I just quoted from Krishna Lilastava, your syllables, Srimad Bhagavatam, your syllables shower pure love of God. So it's instructed in the Shirish Upanishad that we should cultivate knowledge and nescience side by side. So therefore we have such verses as these to examine. This is the duty of the attentive bhakta, of the aspiring devotee, to examine the verses of Srimad Bhagavatam. In the process of initiation, there is a waiting period, 6 months, a year, 11 years, whatever your particular scenario is, in which the spiritual master and the disciple, and this is instructed by Hari Bhakti Vilas, in which the spiritual master and the disciple examine each other. It's the word examine, parikkhit. This is the meaning of parikkhit's name, to examine. So we have a duty. We have a responsibility to be analytical in this process of devotional service, not just to blindly accept anything, but to look at the subject matter presented to us by the different sections of the Bhagavatam and try to understand what's being given to us there. So therefore, we try to dive a little deeply into these verses. If we look at this section of verses, these three that I've got, the three from yesterday that Tamohar Prabhu did, if we look at this, we see that there's a common focal point. And that common focal point is how the living entities function under the different modes of material nature. This is the real point being made here. I mean, we have a little bit of dramatic presentation of how different demons are born and this, that, and the other. But the real issue we're looking at here is that different living entities function under different modes of material nature. We see here, namely, that the demoniac nature, those who are demons, they function under the mode of ignorance. This is pointed out here in these group of verses. And those of the demigod nature, they function under the modes of goodness. And then, of course, those that are devotees, acting as devotees, pure devotees, they function under pure goodness, sudha sattva. Now, the statement made in the purport first verse is very clear on the subject. There's no need for interpretation. Prabhupada very plainly says the demons are in the mode of ignorance and the demigods are in the mode of goodness. Now, of course, there's exceptions to this throughout the Bhagavatam. Vritasura, we see he was a demon, but, you know, very elevated. See, Prahlad Maharaj was born into the family of demons, but very elevated. So it's not black and white. As we often say, Krishna consciousness is not a cookie-cutter process. Those who are expert in baking, like our Gandharvika, you know, she can make 100 cookies, and they're all going to look exactly the same because she's got this cutter that, and they all come out just the same. The first one comes out looking just like the last one. So this is necessary and excellent for presentation, for sellability, for artistic, to have that. In the process of Krishna consciousness, it's not like that. We each have a different application of the details of devotional service. The broad principles are there, four regular principles, 16 rounds, Gayatris, you know, reading the Shastra, associating with devotees, all of this. This is necessary for all of us. But there are details of executing devotional service that are going to be different. Some will be different according to the ashram. Some will be different according to one's particular spiritual position. So these different functions each carry with them influences of the modes of material nature. And how we rise above that, how we elevate ourselves, is completely dependent upon our association with spiritual topics, spiritual personalities, spiritual situations. This sadhu sangha, first of all, there has to be faith. We have to have that shraddha. And then after that, we get sadhu sangha. So by having some faith in the words of the Bhagavatam, by having some faith in the association of devotees, then we can begin to minimize, hopefully even remove completely, the influence on our activities, on our consciousness, by the modes of material nature. We might think, well, goodness is much better than ignorance. In one sense, that's true, but for the aspiring devotee, for the practicing Vaishnava, goodness and ignorance are both in the same boat. It's all modes of material nature. You know, one may be less negative in its influence on us, but the reality is that sudha sattva is what we aspire for, being in the pure goodness, which is free from these modes. Main attraction, Prabhupada points out here, for the demons is sex life, sex activity. And, you know, we can see this not only here, but the variety of different types of sense enjoyment that are available to the encaged living entity in this body, because the senses are always very active. I was listening to a lecture the other day, and Prabhupada, on this point of the active senses, quotes that famous Prashadam song, not simply a Prashadam song, but we associate it like that, that the senses are very uncontrolled and always desiring satisfaction and pleasure. Therefore, we control them by engaging them in the devotional process. Savaimana Krishna Padartha Vandayo. This was the example set by Ambarish Maharaj. First, he took his mind, fixed it on the lotus feet of the Lord. And then by that process, was able to control each of the consequent senses. So this sex activity is, as Prabhupada says here, what's the exact word he uses? Is the background of material existence. Though we see this more and more as Kali Yuga goes on, and we see that the living entities that have no aspiration for spiritual life, that have no inclination towards purifying themselves, that have no desire for higher consciousness, this is what they're left with. Sex activity, sex desire, in so many different forms. You know, this way, that way, the other. I mean, as Kali Yuga moves on, the combinations, we could say, become even more uncommon. But, you know, this is just all part of the material world. When I would, when I was attending the Woodstock Festival, back when we would do that big program there in Poland, and with great happiness, I would sit in that question and answer booth for 6 hours a day and just going. It was so wonderful. And one of the common questions was, well, okay, that's fine about sexual, but what about homosexuality, they would say? Yeah, it's the same thing, you know? It's just a different flavor of the same activity. The bottom line is, has to be given up. All of our interest in this type of activity has to be given up if we want to elevate ourselves back to the spiritual world, because that activity is strictly based upon the satisfaction of the senses. And the satisfaction of the senses is not the foundation for advancing to the spiritual world. Now, if we observe or allow ourselves to kind of be ruled by these modes of material nature, then we should know that we will also be overwhelmed by a variety of desires. The inclination of the senses, the mind's uncontrolled nature to engage the senses in their satisfaction will squarely put us in the middle of material consciousness. I had the good fortune a while back to do some studying while I was preparing for a presentation on the modes of material nature. So I had a little foundation for this. And we like to think of ourselves beyond the material nature. We hope that we're able to elevate ourselves above the modes of material nature. But the reality is, sometimes our mind drags us down into these different types of lower consciousness. I had a brahmachari godbrother back in the day, and I'll politely neglect his name, but he would sometimes, more times than not, fall into Maya, and you could see it on his face. You could just see he's out there today. And you say, Prabhu, what's going on? And he'd look at me and he'd say, oh, it's just that old rascal mind dragging me down to the senses. So it's great to be able to look at that and realize that's what's going on, but let's do something about it. Let's move ourselves beyond that. We don't want to stay there. Yeah, that's where I'm at. I'm just going to hang out here for the day, you know. No, we want to move beyond that level. So in the 14th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, we find that the subject of the modes of material nature and their impact on the jiva are discussed. Bhagavad Gita, of course, is our foundation in developing our Krishna consciousness. It's what most of us are introduced to for the first time. And it's a very clear framework for how we can move forward in our devotional life. So in that 14th chapter, we get to look at how the modes of material nature may or may not be affecting us. So verse number 5, material nature consists of the three modes, goodness, passion, and ignorance. When the living entity comes in contact with nature, O mighty armed Arjuna, he becomes conditioned by these modes. So the living entity is spiritual by nature, but in contact with the modes of material nature, they become influenced in that way. So their true spiritual identity can become covered. Verses 6 to 8. O sinless one, the mode of goodness, being purer than the others, is illuminating, and it frees one from all sinful reactions. Those situated in this mode become conditioned by a sense of happiness and knowledge. Well, this is an interesting point that's made here, is while that mode of goodness is, as it says, a more purer state, it's illuminating, brings freedom from sinful reactions, it still has a conditioned platform to it, in that we become very comfortable in that sense of happiness that we get in this illuminated state. Become very much comfortable in that field of knowledge. Devotional life means that we're just the opposite of that. We want to always aspire to continue to prove ourselves, to move forward, to advance higher. Verse 7. The motive passion is born of unlimited desires and longings, O son of Kunti. And because of this, the embodied living entity is bound to material, fruitive actions. Unlimited desires. Anybody here able to relate to that? No, I guess I'll be the only one to put my hand up. Unlimited material desires means an uncontrolled mind. For one who controls the mind is the best of friends. For one who fails to do so, his very mind will be his greatest enemy. Why? Because the mind will dictate that the senses are the focus. I have to feel this thing. I have to taste this thing. I have to see this thing. I have to hear this thing. All of these different activities, the mind is directing like that. So that mode of passion, unlimited desires, and longings. So I have unlimited desires, which I'll try to fulfill, but I long for things which I can't aspire, can't get, are not going to receive. So this hankering and lamenting, longing and desiring, these two activities are the mode of passion. They keep us constantly, you know, striving for something just out of our reach. Classic example we have, whether we see it in Vrindavan, hear it in Prabhupada's analogies, or see it on the Bugs Bunny Looney Tunes, there's the donkey with the carrot hanging out over its head. Oh, if I just get a couple more steps, that carrot's mine. Oh, all right, a couple of more. Oh, all right, a couple of more. Just endlessly going like that. Because it thinks if I just go a little harder, I'll get the desire of my senses. My longings will be fulfilled. But in reality, it never happens. And the donkey is not intelligent enough to realize that. In the level of intelligent animals that Chanaka Pandit speaks about in his Niti Shastra, and that people commonly refer to, we don't see that the donkey is very high up there, you know? How a certain political party chose it as their mascot, I don't know. I'm not going there. But the reality is that the donkey is not really elevated in its respect because of situations like that. Prabhupada used the example, and I just saw this when I was in Vrindavan. You know, they take these donkeys and they load them up with these bricks, and they've got this wicker baskets that hang on both sides, and they just put bricks upon. Of course, now they're using pickup trucks much more. But the point is that they put these bricks in this, and the donkey's just okay. Carries these bricks all day long, and then at the end, as Prabhupada says, give him a little grass to eat. Oh, life is so good. I got this grass, it's chill time, you know. Tomorrow's another day of carrying bricks, but hey, I'll get grass at the end of the day, no problem. But the point is, the grass is growing right there on the side of the road. Oh, but this has all been cut and pulled and presented to me very nicely, you know. So in the restaurant business, the aspiration is to be a 5-star restaurant. This means that your service to your customers is excellent, that your presentation of the foodstuff is high and attractive, but it's still unmentionable types of foods. So the donkey just doesn't get it. This is the motive, passion. Verse number 8. O son of Bharata, know that the mode of darkness, born of ignorance, is the delusion of all embodied living entities. The results of this mode are madness, indolence, and sleep, which bind the conditioned souls. At a certain age, I guess it's reasonable to say that, at a certain age, insomnia becomes a concern. Mostly, young people don't have this problem. At least that's my observation. They can just sleep anywhere. I mean, I'm amazed when we have these big kirtan programs and there's a little toddler just laying there on the floor sound asleep. You know, just totally out cold. And they're able to do it because they can sleep anywhere. And there was a time, I remember, I could sleep anywhere. Now, of course, you know, sometimes. So this idea of getting good sleep, we think, oh, first thing, did you sleep well last night? If you live with someone, for one of the first things, good morning, did you sleep well last night? Oh, I slept so good. Yeah, it's because we're in the mode of ignorance. It's necessary for rejuvenating the body, but it's not something that we should be aspiring for. Oh, if I could just get 10 good hours of sleep, I'd be such a happy guy. So this is actually manifestation of the motive ignorance, this inclination like that. Now, also with this is madness. I remember back in the day when I lived in New York City, back in the 80s, there would be a class of people, you would see them walking down the street talking to themselves. And no one was there. And you knew they were raving lunatics. Just, you know, some of them were more raving than others. But nowadays, of course, everybody walks around talking to themselves. They've got something in their ear and they're having a phone conversation. And, you know, so what was seen as madness is now just normal. That's because madness is now normal. The desires and the activities of the living entity, this type of madness has become the status quo. It's become how everybody behaves. So these functions are the mode of darkness. Darkness is not so advantageous. If you get up in the middle of the night, you have to, in another age thing, you have to use the bathroom or you get up to, you know, because you can't sleep or whatever, the first thing you do is turn on the light, so that you don't stub your toe or trip across whatever you left on the floor or, you know, whatever. Because the light gives that illumination of your path. You have to go out the hallway and down. Okay, so you turn on the light, you know. So when there's that darkness, there's the possibility of so much difficulty. A bump into something, a trip over something, I stub my toe. I don't think there's any pain worse in the world at the moment of impact than stubbing your toe in the middle of the night on a leg of a piece of furniture. I think we can all relate to that. Well, maybe stepping on Legos that your kids have left out if you've got kids that age. But these things are happening only when there's darkness and you don't see anything. But when the light is there, we're illuminated, as it says back up here, in the mode of goodness. It's illumination. So we can see. So this darkness is not, excuse me, not very advantageous to us. Mode of ignorance. Verse number 10, here again, still in the 14th chapter. Sometimes the modes of goodness are prominent, defeating the modes of passion and ignorance, O son of Bharta. Sometimes the modes of passion defeat the modes of goodness and ignorance. And at other times, ignorance defeats goodness and passion. In this way, there is always competition for supremacy. This particular verse has a couple of nice points in it. This last sentence in it, competition for supremacy. Material consciousness. I'm the best. I've got to be the top of the pile. There's that famous story that Prabhupada tells when he met with the Dainippon printing company in Japan. All the executives were there from the senior to the junior. They were all meeting with him and they had their discussion and then the meeting was finished. They all bowed and left. And the most junior man stayed back to talk moment or two with Prabhupada. And so Prabhupada said to the gentleman, and on their way out, each member presented their business card to Prabhupada. So he's got this stack of business cards from all the executives. This is one of the goals of success in a business, to have your own business card, to have a position that warrants having a little card with your name and position printed on it that you can hand out to people. One of the guys I work with just took a new position in the company here. And he told me, he said, oh, and one of the other perks, I get my own business card. And he was like very proud of this. You know, I get my own business card and my name on it, you know, something I've had for like 15 years. But at any rate, we'll let that go. So Prabhupada said to this young man, so what is your goal in this company? And the man reached over and took all the business cards. His was on the very bottom because he was the most junior. And he put it on the top and tapped it. That was his goal. So this is the goal of material consciousness, to be successful, this competition for supremacy. I want to be the topmost person. I want to win the award as the best this or the best that or, you know, so on and so on and so on. So this competition for supremacy is there amongst the three modes of material nature. Goodness is like, no, I got this, boys, step back. Passion's like, yeah, you think you do. Wait till I get into the game. And then it's just like, nah, I'm just putting everybody to sleep. We're done with this for the day. So they're competing like this. And as the verse says, sometimes goodness becomes prominent. And we feel very satisfied when we're looking a bit internal, when we're acting in a very positive way, when we're doing something that's truly beneficial for ourselves. We feel this goodness. Passion and ignorance, you know, not so much so. These things are there. So we skip down to verse 16 to 18 in that same chapter. The result of pious action is pure and is said to be in the mode of goodness. But action done in the mode of passion results in misery, and action done in the mode of ignorance results in foolishness. This is the amazing thing about the Bhagavad Gita. Completely analyzing our material situation in every aspect and giving a clear understanding of how the different functions work. There's no question marks left in the Bhagavad Gita. If you read the Bhagavad Gita and get to the end and you've still got questions, you better go back and read it again, because everything's right there. And we see that here. It says that, you know, action is pure and said to be in the mode of goodness. Action that's done in passion results in misery. And then action done in ignorance results in foolishness. If we have no knowledge, but we set about doing something, here again, I get people to come into the plumbing department where I work at Lowe's, and they want to repair something. And within 3 or 4 seconds of talking to them, I can tell if we're about to have a successful repair or a flooded home. And sometimes these people just, they don't want to hear. Well, then why did you ask me for your help? You know, they've got this idea that, no, this is how I want to do it. My common statement is, no, thank you, sir. We don't need to reinvent the wheel. It's been working very nicely for the last 2,500 years. The point being that without knowledge, foolishness is the result. Similarly, passion brings about misery. Because in the mode of passion, one's acting through the senses. Not acting through the intelligence, not acting through the higher consciousness, but through the senses. And the senses only bring misery. If you overeat too much, you're guaranteed indigestion. If you, you know, listen to music too loud, you're guaranteeing hearing loss. You know, whatever, all these different things that the senses, if that's your main input, then there's going to be misery associated with that. But when our actions become more pure, not directly for ourselves, we're acting on behalf of others, for the benefit of others. When we're acting guided by higher principles, this is all the mode of goodness. And this type of thinking leads us easily to be able to come to the platform of Sudhasattva. Now, from the mode of goodness, real knowledge develops. From the mode of passion, greed develops. And from the mode of ignorance, again, foolishness, madness, and illusion. Ignorance doesn't have a lot of descriptive qualities here. Basically three: foolish, madness, and ignorance. Those situated in the mode of goodness gradually go upward to the higher planets. Those in the mode of passion live on the earthly planets. Planets, Prabhupada says, with an S, so there are more than one earthly planets. And those in the abominable state of ignorance go down to the hellish planets. Another descriptive term used to give a very clear picture of what this mode of ignorance means. So we can see from the very basic instructions of the Bhagavad Gita that we should analyze where we stand in these different descriptions. Which of the modes are prominent in our activities? Are my daily activities putting me in goodness? Are they putting me in passion? Are they putting me in ignorance? Interestingly enough, it's not a one-time effect either. You know, we may find that on different days and even at different times in the same day, we're feeling the impact of different modes of material nature. You know, sometimes we're, you know, feeling more elevated, or, you know, oh, I can't do anything. You know, whatever. I mean, it's not that we're always going to be in one mode. So we have this influence there. And this section of the Bhagavatam, you know, in general, notes in the conception, for instance, of Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakasipu, the birth of the various demons, that it is not, doesn't take place in the best of circumstances. Hiranyakasipu and Hiranyaksha, The conception was completely in the mode of passion, and as a result, it degraded and gave birth to these two persons who were not very interested. Now, not to too carefully avoid this particular second verse in today's, we also find that the different parts of the body function under different modes of material nature as well. The anus is mentioned here, the buttocks, politely put. What comes out of there is air and solids that are not very clean, not very fragrant, and certainly not considered very noteworthy. This is the function of that gate of the body. Each of the gates has a particular function. So that particular gate of the body has a function to remove all these unnecessary, no longer needed, unclean particles out of the physical body. It's a gate of the body that's dealt with in private. One goes into the toilet, does what they have to do, and then leaves quickly. Nowadays, of course, we have a class of people that spend a great deal of time in this small room. At work here, again, we sell this special little holder that you can put next to it to put your cell phone on. So you don't have to hold it in your hand. You can just look at it while you, you know. I remember when I was growing up, it was the magazine rack. You know, you'd have a magazine rack there on the wall with a variety of magazines. What was the one my parents, Reader's Digest. Reader's Digest, there'd be five or six copies of Reader's Digest in there so that you could go in and sit down and get comfortable and pick up something and read like this, you know. That was the mood. Let me get comfortable, I'm going to stay here for a while, you know. But for an elevated soul, this isn't the mood. The mood is, let me get in here, do my business, get cleaned up and get out. I'm through with this place. And if I happen to have to walk in that room, now I got to get clean all over again. Nobody would walk into the toilet and then with those same clothes walk onto the altar. Considered an unclean place. So that's because that function of the body, that particular gate, is producing unclean items. So when we read that from that gate of Brahma's body, the demons are born, we can understand very clearly what the mentality of those types of persons are. How do we find ourselves under these modes? Or one might say, sometimes are always under these modes. Well, the Bhagavatam, third canto, 26th chapter, a little bit down the road for us in our studies, gives us an explanation in these two verses. The material ego springs up from the mahatattva, the material elements, which evolved from the Lord's own energy. The material ego is endowed predominantly with the active power of three kinds, goodness, passion, and ignorance. It is from these three types of material ego that the mind, the senses of perception, the organs of action, and the gross elements evolve. So we have a very clear understanding this three modes of material nature are completely associated with the mahatattva. That means they're not a part of our spiritual identity. They're separate. This false ego is characterized as the doer, as an instrument, and as an effect. It is further characterized as serene, active, or dull according to how it is influenced by the modes of passion, goodness, passion, and ignorance. Obviously, goodness is associated with serene consciousness, passion is associated with an active consciousness, and ignorance is associated with a dull consciousness. From the ego of goodness, another transformation takes place. From this evolves the mind, whose thoughts and reflections give rise to desire. So as much as we identify with the false ego, as much as we identify with these modes of material nature, then we become impacted by them. Now, how does this happen? Well, Bhagavatam continues and explains, by transformation of the false ego in passion, intelligence takes birth. Well, that's interesting. The functions of intelligence are to help in ascertaining the nature of objects when they come into view and how they can help the senses. So it's actually considered the level of intelligence to look at how can I engage my senses in being happy and enjoying. Doubt, misapprehension, correct apprehension, memory and sleep, as determined by their different functions, are said to be characteristics of intelligence. Now, if we look at these first four items in this list Prabhupada gives here, to have doubts, misrepresentation, correct apprehension, and the ability to remember our actions, this will help us to act in a proper way. We have to be doubtful that the senses are going to satisfy us. We have to be careful of misapprehensions in thinking the senses are going to bring us happiness. We have to be guided by Shastra, Sadhu, and Guru with the correct apprehension of sense gratification. And we have to have the memory of the fact that we did not get real pleasure when we let the senses dictate what we were going to do. So these four points, these elevate us to the mode of goodness. And that mode of goodness is the threshold to the path of pure goodness. So we would obviously ask, well, what is pure goodness? What is Sudasattva that it is different? Fourth canto of the Bhagavatam, third chapter, gives us that explanation. The living entity is constitutionally pure. In the Vedic literature, it is said that the soul is always pure and uncontaminated by material attachment, the three modes of nature. The identification of the body with the soul is due to misunderstanding. As soon as one is fully Krishna conscious, it is to be understood that one is in their pure, original, constitutional position. This is very, very important. When we become Krishna conscious, this is our original position. This state of existence is called Sudhasattva, which means that we are transcendental to the material qualities and to the material modes of nature. Excuse me. Since this Sudhasattva existence is under the direct action of the Lord, in this state, the activities of material consciousness stop. This is an important thing to understand. How do I stop my longings, my desires, my hankerings? By putting myself directly under the shelter of the spiritual master and the personality of Godhead. Prabhupada says it right here. The state of activities of the material consciousness stops. So this is the easiest way to do it. For example, when iron is put into the fire, it becomes warm, and then it becomes red hot. And although it is iron, it will act like fire. Similarly, when copper is surcharged with electricity, its action as copper stops, and it acts as electricity. Everybody knows, or anybody that's in construction knows, that when you're wiring a building, you use copper wiring. It's the best format for turning it because it accepts that electricity and 100% passes it through. Bhagavad Gita confirms that anyone who engages in unadulterated devotional service, that means devotional service free from the modes of material nature, to the Lord is at once elevated to the position of pure Brahman, free from the modes of nature. Therefore, fourth canto of the Bhagavatam continues, Sudhasattva, as described in this section of the Bhagavatam, is the transcendental position of the living entity free from the modes of material nature. Now, what's really important in this particular section is in this conclusion, one who is situated in Sudhasattva, pure goodness, is above the modes of material nature. One's devotional service is purified. Sometimes our devotional service will be influenced by the different modes. But when we're in the Sudhasattva state, we're above that stage. We might inquire that since factually the devotee has a material body, how is it possible that that same materialistic eyes of this body become purified by devotional service? Well, this example, as it's stated by Lord Chaitanya in devotional service, means cleansing the mirror of the mind. As we know, when you get a clean mirror, just like in the bathroom when you're brushing your teeth, undoubtedly, you know, the mirror gets, you know, spots on it. When you're washing your hands, the water flies up. So you have to clean that mirror regularly so you get that clear reflection. If you try to put your T-lock on in a mirror that's dirty, or maybe you just had a hot shower and the mirror is all steamed up, you can't see. So you clear that off and you can properly put your T-lock on. So this is very, very important that one does this. Simply by cleansing the mirror of the mind, one can have a clear conception of the personality of Godhead, free from the influence of the modes of material nature. Simply by hearing about Krishna, chanting about Krishna, if one's mind is always engaged in chanting and hearing and not allowed to go anywhere else, one can realize the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, although we have this tendency to lean in one direction or the other, depending on how the modes are impacting us and we're allowing that to happen, we can carefully avoid falling under the modes, as noted here, by simply by hearing about Krishna, chanting about him, and engaging our mind in chanting and hearing, not to go anywhere else, we can realize the personality of Godhead. So these activities presented in these verses here, although they're rather graphic and rather unsettling, we might say even, we find that there's nothing unordinary about it. This is the impact of the modes of material nature. This is the modes of material nature taking their original appearance, we could even say, you know. And while Brahma, as it says, he first laughed at the stupidity of the demons for their desires, he realized that these guys are serious. They're completely controlled by the mode of ignorance and completely trying to satisfy their senses in a way that is not proper. So immediately, it says, he became indignant and ran out of great haste and fear from them. Of course, his running was to take shelter of the personality of Godhead, as we'll learn later in this chapter, but I believe this is the message that we should take away from these verses of the Bhagavatam and try and appreciate how, if we subject ourselves to the modes of material nature, such uncommon activities being described here won't impact us in any way, shape, or form. So we'll finish there for today. If there's some questions, in a very short time, we could take a couple of questions, but otherwise, as I say, this non-controversial verse of demons being born from lower gates of the body. Oh, good. No questions. All right. Well, great. Whew, got off that one easy. All right. Thank you all very much. All glories to Srimad Bhagavatam. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.